some MLB moves, a little NBA, some NFL, and our first NCAA college head coach from Lake George today on The Brunch. Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Brunch. It's a special brunch here. We are broadcasting from Lake George. And Joe, would you say it's great to be here?
It's great to be here, Chris. Lake George, such a beautiful place. And it is just splendid that we could brunch from such a wondrous facility here in Lake George. And we are proud to announce that John Becker, Vermont's head coach, will be joining us in just a moment.
Yes, but like Joe said in the intro, we're going to have a little MLB, a little NBA, a little NFL, basically a brunch potpourri as well as an interview. And with that being said, we're going to get Vermont basketball head coach John Becker on the phone. Becker and his Vermont team starting to string some wins together in the America East. They had a good performance against Duke, almost beat the team in Cameron Indoor. And John is going to talk to us a little bit about how he expects to get his team back to the NCAA tournament. John, first question we want to ask you, everyone has been talking about your team's big game against Duke and how you guys nearly went into Cameron Indoor and stunned one of the top teams in the country. What does that performance say about your team?
And we can be really good when we're playing the right way. I mean, you know, we played a really good game and you know, competed and made shots. And, you know, this team was picked to win the America East. And we've been banged up and had a lot of injuries and played a lot of tough road games. But we put it all together like we did in Cameron, you know, that night. We could be really good.
What do you think is more valuable about a game like that one against Duke? Do you think it's the experience that you get from playing a team like that, or do you think it's the ability to potentially boost your resume?
Well, I think, you know, I think it showed our guys that, you know, we can compete with anyone in the country. And, you know, obviously our guys were excited to play that game. We appreciate Duke giving us an opportunity to go down there and play them. And obviously a model, you know, university and basketball program. But, you know, that experience on national television, you know, was just it's great for the program, for recruiting, to give our guys a chance to show what they can do to a national audience. You know, and you know, the win would have really helped our resume and really would have been that quality non-conference win that, you know, you need to get every year. But even, you know, the way we played and handled the situation and competed, there's been a lot of positivity from that game, despite coming up a point short.
Coach, Clancy Rugg has started off the season with a bang, and he's leading the team in scoring. He's second in rebounds. What can you say about the way the senior is performing both on and off the court?
No, he's just been tremendous. I mean, he's a former walk-on. You know, his first 2 years here, he walked on. He's a local kid, grew up. You know, I could throw a stone over to his house where he grew up from the gym here. The way he's progressed every year, and last year was a second team all-league guy for us, and he's off to a great start this year. And two of our better big guys have been injured so far this season, so he's really had to play a lot of minutes and carry the load inside. And he's a slight, you know, build guy, and so he's had a battle against, you know, some pretty big bigs that we've played against. So, you know, he's probably playing too many minutes right now, but he's off to a great start and really producing for us.
Yeah, you guys got off to a bit of a slow start this year, but you're starting to build a little momentum. With Vermont's history of being one of the beasts of the America East, what do you think your team has to do? What's the key for you guys to get back to the top of the East, the America East, and win the conference and get back to the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, I mean, we've got to get healthy, which we will. That's going to help our depth because I like to play a lot of guys. And right now I'm only able to play seven guys because of injuries. But the other thing is we have to be better defensively. I mean, it's been a staple of our program. Last year we gave up 59 points a game. And this year we're giving up 73 points a game. So our defense has to get a lot better. You know, with the new rules, it's harder to be a great defensive team, I think. But we have a lot of room for improvement on that end of the court. So we have 2 weeks off here, so we'll spend a lot
Yeah, and you talked about the wanting to play a bunch of players. In order for your team to reach its full potential, which guys do you foresee stepping up, whether they're injured now or not, and having big years for the Catamounts?
You know, Bonnie Vocal's our best player. You know, leads the team in rebounding, assists, steals. Doesn't score well, but he's off to a great start. So he'll do his thing. And Sandro Carissimo, our point guard, is another guy that we'll get double-digit points out of. And you know, we expect, and Clancy Rugg. I think those three guys have done it and will do it again this year. And then, you know, guys that have to kind of step up. Ethan O'Day has been injured. He broke his thumb in the first game against St. Joe's. But he was having a great preseason exhibition game. He had 24 points in one of our exhibition games and looked like he was ready to take that jump from freshman to sophomore year, 6'9", athletic, big. So he was poised to have a breakout year, so he should be back here in the next couple weeks. We'll need him to kind of step up and, you know, give Clancy some help down low. Ryan Pearson, a kid from Northeastern that sat out transfer and sat out last year, that broke his leg in the off season. He's been out since, but he is getting closer to being able to come back, and he'll give us a true post presence. He's 6'10", 240, 250, big, strong kid. So those two guys will be huge, and we're going to need them to have give us production. Hector Harold is a kid transfer from Pepperdine, had 24 points against Duke and had a great game that night. Has been up and down. A lot of kids that sit out a year after, you know, their first year back after transferring tends to be a little bit inconsistent. And so I expect him to give us, you know, have great nights like he did at Duke. And then, the sooner he can get consistent, he'll be able to have an impact for us. But I think, those three guys, should really need to be good. And then the other kid that's moved into starting lineup is Kurt Steidel, a freshman from Connecticut, who started the last game against Sonoma State, had 19 points at the two-guard position. So he's really shooting the ball. He's shooting 50%+ from three, and something we desperately need. And so he's a guy that is having, you know, is probably, of all the new guys, is having the most impact right now. And hopefully it continues.
And one more question we want to ask you, Coach, before I let you go. You mentioned before the way the officiating has changed from last year to this year. What's your opinion on how they're starting to call more fouls in the games?
Yeah, I mean, it's taken a while to get used to, and it's tough. At times it just puts the defense at a real disadvantage when guys can basically just put their head down and create contact and get a foul called. So we have to do a better job coaching defense and figuring out how to play defense without fouling. But there's some games where it's there's a lot more fouls called than other games there isn't. And so I think it's just taking everyone a while to get used to, but offensively, I think it makes things, scoring's up. You know, we're scoring 8 more points a game, I think, this year so far, 7 more points a game. But we have to, it's cost us some games, fouling too much, and we got to figure out how to play defense better without fouling.
All right, Coach. Well, we wish you luck in the transition period it's going to take to get used to those rules. Also, wish your guys luck getting healthy, and hopefully you could get your team back in the full swing of things by the end of the year. We're pulling for you guys in your conference. Hopefully you can win the tournament, and good luck going forward.
Yeah, best of luck, Coach.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate having me.
Take care.
That's it.
All right, that was Vermont head coach John Becker. We want to thank him for being on the show. We have multiple interviews coming up in the future, including Bob Hoffman of Mercer.
Yeah, we're going to get to Bob later this week. We have Towson's head coach, Pat Skerry, will be on the show next week. And then...
The moment you've all been waiting for.
The moment you've all been waiting for, the return of Murray State's Steve Frome.
And that's a... That one's not... That interview has not been scheduled yet, but We're very excited to have Steve Perrone back on the show because we really enjoyed his interview last year, and we'd like to talk to him a little bit about his former point guard talent that is now playing in the NBA and dropped 25 points last night, Isaiah Cannon.
Yeah, good for Isaiah, and we look forward.
And that was against Miami Heat.
It was. Well, that was last night?
Silverman told me it was last night.
It wasn't the Heat, though, because the Pistons just beat the Heat. We just saw that highlight.
Oh.
It was somebody else.
No, all right. Well, it was someone else. But
Regardless,
it was still Isaiah Cannon scoring 25 points. Yeah. So we'll ask Prom about that and a lot more on that interview. So on to now what I guess we'll move on to the MLB real quick because I have something to tell you, Chris.
Yeah.
Jacoby Ellsbury is switching sides. He's going from your Sox to my Yanks.
Why would you guys re-sign Johnny Damon?
Well, the thing is, Jacoby Ellsbury is not Johnny Damon.
Oh, he did exactly what Johnny Damon did. So
he's a little younger than Johnny Damon was when the Yankees got him.
You just win the World Series in Boston, then you go to.
You're clearly mad. You're clearly upset that one of your better players going to be throwing on the pinstripes. I'll get you my opinion on the actual move in a second in terms of what the Yankees are doing, but. Any last words for Jacoby as he leaves the Boston area and will be moving to the Bronx?
I respect Jacoby, and I can't really wish him the best of luck because I don't want him to see
you can.
The Yankees, but, you know, I'm very happy with what he did. He brought two World Series to the city, and he's been such a force at the top of the lineup. So that's going to be a big issue, replacing his speed on the bases. But we've got some outfielders, and I think a guy named Quinton Berry.
Well, Jackie Bradley, too.
Yes, but Quinton Berry is a quick guy.
All right, so
we've got plenty of guys.
In terms of the Yankees, I mean, this pretty much takes him out of the Cano sweepstakes here, unless Cano really brought down his price.
Who's going to play second? I saw they were thinking about getting Infante.
Maybe a Kelly Johnson from Toronto. Here's the thing. The Yankees just took what Cano wanted was about $250 million, and they just took that $250 million, and they spent it on two guys instead of spending it on just Cano. They got Brian McCann and Jacoby Ellsbury, and, you know, as good of a player as Cano is, I think I like what the Yankees did in that they didn't put all their eggs in one basket. Now, at the same time, I think they overpaid both Jacoby Ellsbury and Brian McCann. I think they overpaid Ellsbury more because Ellsbury, while he's a good player, has a lot of injury risk, and he's 30 years old, and they gave him 7 years, so shouldn't that give you a bit of a discount? They're giving him $21 million a year to play for them. I'm a little concerned about that contract, but in terms of what it's going to do if McCann and Ellsbury stay healthy is it's going to make this team a lot different than what we've seen in the past because they're going to have Brett Gardner and Jacoby Ellsbury at the top of that lineup. Those are two 40-50 steal guys right there.
Yeah, and they're going to get some power from the catcher position, but in terms of overpaying, everybody gets overpaid in the MLB these days. It's really almost unavoidable, and if you're the New York Yankees, you're going to overpay some guys.
You know what's funny, though? The Seattle Mariners are coming out in these Cano sweepstakes. If they were to sign Cano, they would have Robinson Cano and Felix Hernandez making $45 million a year. You know what their payroll is as a team?
What is it? Is it less than $100 million?
If they signed Cano, it would be about $90 million. So half of their payroll
going to two guys.
Would go to two guys.
That's just ridiculous.
So I don't understand how you could justify it if you're Seattle, unless you're going to just go on a spending spree.
Can we get some kind of salary cap in the MLB, or is that just never going to happen?
It's not going to happen. It's just not. But speaking of Seattle, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, it's concerning for the NFC
Juddy's Hawks.
A whole. As we switch gears from the MLB to the NFL. But the Seattle Mariners need to take some lessons from the Seattle Seahawks on how to run a team and how to get a crowd going. Because that was nuts. That atmosphere was insane. And you look at a game like that and you're like, how much could crowd noise actually impact a game? But you know how good the Saints offense and Drew Brees is.
Well, the thing that
look what they made the Saints look like.
What I think is really underrated in terms of sports, any sport, is shifting momentum. And at any moment, this crowd can shift momentum in Seattle's favor and that, and then, you know, Drew Brees throws an incomplete pass, he throws a pick, and all of a sudden, you're sitting there on the bench thinking, what is going on right now? I can't even wrap my head around it, because the crowd is so loud, the team is so energized, and they play a Smash Mouth style of football. They proved that, you know, right now, if you're not picking Seattle to win the NFC, you're going out on a limb. It's definitely seems that way right now, because it looks like they've pretty much locked up home field advantage.
Yeah, it kind of sucks.
Yeah,
I mean,
it kind of does suck.
The one thing I've learned from the history of the NFL, though, is nothing's obvious. So, you know, this is about as obvious as it looked, but who knows what happens? I mean, there's still 4 weeks left in the regular season,
yeah,
and then there's still the playoffs to be had. And, you know, I mean, the Seahawks do look like the most dominant team in the NFL if they're playing on their home field, which they will be for every game in the playoffs.
Except for the Super Bowl, if they get there.
Yes, which that'll be an issue for them. But
maybe not,
who knows
what
happens?
What
could happen here? I mean, of course, injury could happen.
There's a couple interesting things.
You know,
let's look at each team's and their scenarios. Okay, the Carolina Panthers, before they were on this hot streak, almost beat Seattle Week One.
Yeah, but that was in Carolina.
I know. I'm just saying, the New Orleans Saints, I think, are, if you're Sean Payton, you're thinking, you know what, I'm obviously focusing on every game one at a time, but I need to figure out a way to beat Seattle at some point.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you one thing, though. The teams that are going to have a chance to play Seattle in the playoffs, Saints, the Panthers, the 49ers, it's going to help them that they play them in the regular season. And I think, does Seattle play Detroit?
No, they played them last year.
Okay, all right. But three of the five teams that are going to join Seattle in the postseason.
One of Detroit's four wins last year was against the Seahawks.
Okay. And
just saying.
Yeah. Well, it's going to definitely help, because, I mean, how much worse could it get if you're the 49ers,
yeah,
who got blown out early in the year, and then the Saints, who got blown out a couple days ago? I mean, how much worse could it get? I mean, you got to learn from that. It's kind of, if I had a choice to whether or not to just play Seattle for the first time in the postseason or get them in the regular season first in Seattle and then have a chance to play them again, I would play them in the regular season.
Well,
at least you know what to expect from that crowd and what's going to happen.
The thing is, too, if Seattle beats the Niners this week, it's very hard to beat a team three times in a season.
Yeah, but I don't
very
know
difficult.
If I would hope. If as a Niner fan, I'm not hoping the
Jim
Niners
Harbaugh
lose
the,
that
no,
game.
No, I'm just saying, if that's the case, Jim Harbaugh in the playoffs, too. And, hey, maybe Tony Romo returns to Seattle and redeems himself.
Oh, boy.
From,
how would you feel if the Cowboys had to travel up to Seattle?
It wouldn't be very, very fun.
I don't think it would be very fun at all.
Wouldn't be very good.
Obviously, that's the biggest news of the weekend, is that Seattle basically just won the NFC. But, you know, the Chiefs, I wanted to talk about them a little bit, because we had been hating on the Kansas City Alex Smiths up until about 4 weeks ago, and then the last 3 weeks they've lost every game. So you take a step back now, and you ask yourself, how good are the Kansas City Alex Smiths?
I say they are what they are, a wild card team. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
And I think they can win a playoff game. They've got a good defense, but the defense has not been playing well recently. But if things work out the way they should, they will probably be heading to Indy, facing a very
winnable game, yeah.
It's a very vulnerable Colts team that barely knocked off the Titans. So with the Chiefs, you have a floor and you have a ceiling, and
the Chiefs aren't going to go to New England and win. They're not going to go to Denver and win.
Yeah,
it's just not going to happen.
Oh, I didn't do very
now,
well this week.
Yeah, I wanted to just bring up the standings here.
That's not good.
We both had pretty bad weeks this week. You went 5-10-1. I went 6-9-1. So your record is now 74-110-7.
Issues.
You just haven't been able to turn it around, have you? I mean, you showed promise last week, and then you just take two steps back.
Issues.
And then me,
there are issues.
102-82-7. I'm still beating Pete Prisco, who I got into a little dispute with on Twitter.
Leaves are brown, though.
A couple weeks ago. He told me that when the leaves turn brown, he will have the crown.
The leaves are brown, though.
Well, the leaves just turned brown, and I went 6-9-1, so maybe he's onto something there.
Does he have the crown?
I don't know if he has the crown. I'm still beating him. But
so he couldn't have the crown yet.
He doesn't have the crown. The Eagles was the only push. Now, the Eagles, they held their own. I mean, they should have blown out the Cardinals, I think. But when you look at the Eagles,
they seem to have trouble sustaining big leads.
Yeah, especially at home. You know, the home Eagles, a little questionable. Yeah. But the Cardinals, I think they are what we thought they were. And it's funny saying that, considering Denny Green of the Cardinals was the one that went on that they are who we thought they were rant back on Monday Night Football a bunch of years ago. The Cardinals are going to play well at home. They're not going to play well on the road. And that's what we saw this week. They went to Philly. They mounted a bit of a comeback, but lost.
They're really, you know, one of those teams that are just not good enough to make the playoffs. They're solid.
All right, pick a team, Chris.
Okay.
That impressed you this week.
A team that impressed me.
That really impressed you.
Well,
it's tough.
It is tough.
I look past the Seahawks here.
Yeah. Well, that's the obvious choice. You know, it could be. There wasn't a lot of crazy stuff that happened this week, but it probably would be a toss up between, I'd say, Jacksonville.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say.
Carolina.
That's a good one too.
Or Detroit, you know. Detroit coming off of two boneheaded losses, short week, and they're facing division rival Packers, and they just dominated them, and they continued to have mistakes, but they still dominated them. And then Carolina, you know, yeah, they blew out the Bucks, big whoop, but they did what they had to do, and that's what they've been doing on this winning streak. And then the Jags have won 3 of 4, all on the road, right?
Yes.
They are.
Well, the four weren't all on the road. The three wins were on the road.
Yes, so the Jaguars.
I think I agree with the Jags and the Panthers. I'm really impressed with the Panthers now because I keep thinking the Panthers are going to slip up, and they don't. Now, they're going to New Orleans this week, so you would think.
My Panthers.
They're Panthers.
Told you.
Now, we will pick Week 14 games on our show tomorrow, but we do have to pick one game today.
Of course.
Which is
Houston. At Jacksonville.
Yeah. What a game there. Well, the Jags are playing well.
There are some implications here.
There are. In the opposite direction of what you would normally play for.
Why is Houston being favored?
Houston is a 3-point favorite in Jacksonville. Chris,
Jacksonville has more wins.
Who do you have here?
I guess I have to go with my Jags. I mean,
really?
They're getting points, and Houston is awful. Like, they are just awful.
Houston played a very stellar game last week.
Yeah, they're awful.
Okay.
Jacksonville getting the points.
Here's the thing. You know, because we talk so much about the road and home Eagles. How about the road and home Jags? I mean, the splits are amazing. The Jags are averaging 6 points per game at home this year, Chris. What do you have to say about that?
That's pretty bad, because that just means you're not scoring.
Okay, that is what it means. It means that you're not scoring touchdowns.
That is brutal.
All right, now, they did have more than six in their technical home game that they played in London, but I'm throwing that out because they didn't actually play that game at home.
Yeah.
So, they've played 4 games at home, and they've scored 25 points. So, I'm taking the Texans, for that reason and for the reason that the Jags just beat Houston a couple weeks ago. And I don't think the Jags could beat the Texans both games this year. And
Thursday night football, crazy things happen.
I'm going to take Houston here. I like the Texans. I mean, and I was also looking at the Texans' recent schedule. I mean, they've lost 10 games in a row, right? They're 2-10. 6 of those 10 games were decided by one score. This team's not as bad as you think they are.
Well, there's talent there, and that's why people are saying that if they get a high draft pick, they could be in very good shape next year. But maybe they'll just be looking for that draft pick, and maybe they'll say, hey.
Yeah, but from past experience, I have not seen teams
tank. No, of course not. But this team is still in a bit of trouble.
So I'm on the Texans, you're on the Jags.
Yes, sir.
And it's not a good sign that when I typed in Texans just now, the cell lit
you're
up red.
Wow. It's so already telling you.
It's telling me they're going to lose.
That you're wrong.
But on from our Microsoft Excel problems, we'll move on to the NBA here. And the NBA has been interesting this year.
It has.
In that the East sucks.
The East is awful.
And the West is very, very good.
Well, I think right now, any team in the almost any team in the West, aside from the Jazz and the Kings, and this is as of before last night, would have the 3 seed in the East.
No.
Yes, because there's a couple of teams like Minnesota, maybe it was Denver, maybe it was Phoenix, something like that. They were at 500, the same as the 500 Atlanta Hawks.
I don't remember what I saw. The Hawks are the 3, and they're 500.
Oh, yeah.
I saw a tweet from, I think it was Tom Haberstroh the other day, that it gave the East's record against the West this year. And I'm going to try to look that up right now. So I'll give you that number in a second. But you look at the East, and obviously you have the Pacers, you have the Heat, and then you have no one else.
Yeah, no one.
Okay. Last night, the Warriors showed why they're an elite team in the West. You have Portland, who is stellar this year. You have OKC.
San Antonio.
Denver's LA.
Denver's starting to look okay at home.
You have the Clippers. So what does this mean for the Eastern Conference? I mean, what's going to happen from here on out? Is there hope?
There is hope, I think, because I think that there's been some teams that are getting better. We just saw the Pistons win in Miami last night, so they're not a joke. We saw the way the Wizards have kind of been playing and getting on that hot streak. John Wall leading his team. They're up there. The Toronto Raptors are not spectacular, but right now they're the class of the Atlantic Division, and they have been competitive in games. You saw them in the game against Golden State. I got
the number.
You got the number.
This is from 6 hours ago. Okay, so this is relevant right now. The East is 23-63 against the West. And
wow.
You want to know an even more stunning number?
What?
If you take out the Heat and the Pacers games.
Oh, no.
16-62.
Wow.
That's 20%.
It's impressive, though. But that means that the Pacers and the Heat are 10-1 against the West.
Yeah, so
that only loss being the Indiana's close loss in Portland.
Yeah.
So the Heat haven't lost in the West yet. So that's the thing. You could very well see the East suck it up this year.
Yeah, it doesn't matter,
and
really.
The winner could, again, come from the Eastern Conference, as it has the past 2 years.
Yep. So, I guess it doesn't matter which conference. It kind of sucks for the Western Conference teams.
Of course, but there's nothing you do. It's geographical.
Kinda. I mean, is Memphis on the West Coast?
No, but it's for the most part.
Ask Prome.
Geographical.
Is Memphis on the West Coast?
That's okay. Well, then who else should be on the East Coast? Who should be on the East Coast?
Well, they should be.
I mean, sorry, who should be on the West Coast from the East Coast?
Who should be in the Western Conference? Who should you move over? Is what
you're
who
saying? Is on the West Coast that's in the Eastern Conference?
You could probably find some team.
Maybe you push over Chicago. Yeah, I was just going to say that. Wow, bring the Bulls to the Western Conference.
Are we running out of things to talk about here on the brunch?
No. Actually, I wanted to get your opinion.
Oh, Milwaukee's a good one.
Yeah. I want to get your opinion on a couple things in terms of the NBA and in terms of this conference non-parity, if you will. What do you think? Which team? Pick a team in each conference for each of these questions. Which team do you think that is struggling now will emerge and really be a playoff contender? And which team do you think will kind of fall back behind
for both conferences?
Yeah, pick one of each conference.
All right, the Nets answered your first question.
Well, that was the easy answer.
Yeah, the Nets. I'm serious about the Nets though, because They've had a lot of injuries, is what you have to remember here. It's not really. I mean, I know they're bad, but
they're built for. They're built
but
for
they
injury.
Have injuries. A team that's doing well, I don't think is going to do. I mean, do I have to answer that?
Of course. Well, the Celtics are leading
Boston?
The Atlanta?
Yeah,
what?
I don't know.
Oh, God.
But I guess I'll take Boston or Philly.
I feel like the Cavaliers are going to make a little run. I've got faith in the Cavaliers.
All right, and then who's your team that's not going to? That's going
to
fall off.
Team is going to fall off, I think.
Do you see these standings?
Yeah, Washington third at 9-9. I think Atlanta's going to fall off. I really do.
I don't think Atlanta's
bad. I don't think they're that good, though.
Where are they going to fall to? 6?
7 or 8, maybe.
They're still going to make the playoffs. You look at the West.
Mm.
You know, a team that's not doing... Well, If you asked me this question a couple weeks ago, I would have said New Orleans is gonna improve. But now they have.
I think Minnesota is gonna improve. I think they've struggled a little bit lately. They're 9-10, and they're actually the third worst team in the conference at 9-10. But
that would be fifth in the East.
Yeah, but they have a lot of pieces. They played very well in the beginning of the year, and I think they just hit a slump after that hot start. So I could see them falling off, or them rising a little bit. In terms of a team falling off,
I mean, the obvious pick would be to say Portland.
But I don't know if Portland's going to fall off that much.
I agree with you.
I think Denver.
Clippers.
I'm going to say Denver.
I'm going to say the Clippers.
I'm going to say Denver because I think that they're 11-6 right now. They've won 7 in a row, but they have some issues on the road. And they still, like, you know, just watching, like, looking at the starting lineup, and, like, I know it's not terrible, but you're starting Randy Foy, Jordan Hamilton, and J.J. Hickson. You know, it's not just a recipe for a contender, I think.
Well, you look at the Clippers, and they just lost J.J. Redick for a month, so that's definitely going to hinder their offensive abilities. And you can't keep up the way Chris Paul's been playing the entire year. Or maybe you can, I don't know. Do you want to wrap up the brunch right there?
Yeah, I think we're going to wrap up the brunch. We got some little tidbits on everything here. We had a good time talking to Coach John Becker. We had a good time talking to NFL, NBA, MLB, and giving you this diverse edition of the brunch. We will be back later in the week, and that'll be a good one because, of course, we're giving you our Week 14 NFL picks, which I know you all love so very much. But we're going to have another coach on. And
I think it's going to be Bob Hoffman.
It's going to be Bob Hoffman of Mercer University. And I have a feeling it's going to be a good one. I think it's going to be a good one.
I'm pretty confident it's going to be a good one.
I mean, the last time we interviewed a coach from the Atlantic Sun, he made it to the Sweet 16
as
a 15 seed and got a job at USC. So Andy Enfield, looking at you.
We'll have to bring that up to Hoffman.
We will. We'll mention Gulf Coast to Hoffman. I'm sure he'll have some things to say about it. But best of luck to Vermont. Best of luck to the Catamounts. Follow us on Twitter at SportsBrunch, at Chris Mulkey, and at JosephCaputo92. And we will see you later in the week.
Take care, everyone.